Jesus said to his disciples, "Go into the whole world and proclaim the gospel to every creature. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. Whoever does not believe will be condemned. These signs will accompany those who believe. In my name they will drive out demons. They will speak new languages. They will pick up serpents with their hands, and if they drink any deadly thing, it will not harm them. They will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover." So then the Lord Jesus, after he spoke to them, was taken up into heaven and took his seat at the right hand of God. But they went forth and preached everywhere, while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the word through accompanying signs. The Gospel of the Lord. So what now? We've arrived at Ascension. He's gone. He's fulfilled the mission. He's left us to our own devices. What now? You know, this question, those words, that phrase, tends to occur at a lot of different moments of our life. You think about it, like any life change, we start to ask this question, so what now? Graduating from school, what now? Taking on a different job, what now? A relationship's beginning or an ending, what now? And we experience this every year with the seasons of the church. When we reach the end of Advent, we enter into Christmas, you know, he's born, what now? Or we get to the end of Lent and Easter, like, he's died, he's resurrected, what now? And there's a question within the question. Why do we ask that? Why are we curious about what now? What's next? Is it a sign that we lack satisfaction? Or is there a yearning for more? Is it evidence that we're easily bored and need constant entertainment? Like, oh, that was great. What now? Why do we ask what is next? And, you know, there's a natural curiosity within the human person. And there's a desire to know, to acquire knowledge, even to have guidance or a plan for the things that we're called to do next. But also, do we ask this what now because we're moving on too quickly? We're hopping from one task to another, or are we resisting change? We're hesitant. We're resisting the change that may be necessary in our lives. Maybe it even comes down to one simple point that we're just afraid of what's next because it's unknown. So what now? But there's a genuine desire in people to have this knowledge. There's a genuine desire to continue on with a mission, with a purpose, with life. And there's nothing morally wrong with asking this question. The problem, as with most things in life, comes from our intent. We can ask all day long, what now? What's next? What do we do? Where do we go? But it comes down to the intent. Am I asking because I'm trying to avoid something? Am I asking so that I can gain new knowledge and lean into something? If we look back over the past 7 weeks, since the beginning of the Easter season, we've been hearing about the apostles in the first readings of Mass, how they're going out and living the mission Jesus had been preparing them for. See, they were sent, they were launched, and even in the gospel today, you might be thinking like, all right, Lord, like, what now? He's like, go. Into the world, proclaiming the gospel to every creature. And so in that being sent, in that being launched, they are given their task. They know what now they're called to do. It's live the mission that you've been prepared for. There's different ways in which we end the Mass. You're probably familiar with most of them. You know, we can say, go in peace, thanks be to God. We can say, go in peace, glorifying the Lord by your life. That's probably my favorite one. There's another one. I think it's go in peace to love and serve the Lord. I had to double check. But there's one I kind of am hesitant to use because of how I hear it said in my head. And it's this one. Go in peace. The Mass has ended. Thanks be to God. I'm just like, wrong. That's not what we're thankful that the Mass has ended. No, it's not. But that may be the most applicable one when it comes to this question and what is next. So what now? The Mass has ended. All right, go in peace. The Mass has ended. Like, this part is done. So what now? We go. We leave. We get to work. We go and live the mission. We share the message. We take action. So we may try that in the future. But if I hear that tone, thanks be to God, I'm changing it. Intent. It's all about intent. But we're being sent. We're being launched. Like, that's what's now. There was a movie that came out in 2006 called Failure to Launch. It had Matthew McConaughey and I think Jessica Parker. I don't know who the woman was. It doesn't matter. But the premise of the movie is fairly interesting. Now, there's a 35-year-old guy that's a year younger than me. He's got a really interesting job, much like I do. He's got a really cool car, much like I do. He's got all these passions and hobbies, much like I do. But here's the caveat. Here's the difference. He still lives at home with his parents. I do not. Right? This idea, like, we look at that movie back in 2006, and it's a humorous rom-com kind of movie, right? Like, the parents are like, dude, like, get out, get a job, like, go on with life. And he's just content with having his mom do his laundry and get the groceries and have food whenever he wants. And it's like, you're a grown adult. You need to go do some stuff. Like, that's what's now. And so they devise this plan to get this woman who's got a whole thing to, like, get him out of the house. And then hilarity ensues, you know. And it backfires, or they probably fall in love because it's a rom-com. Who knows? But yet we see that in the modern world. Like, we see younger people delaying this being launched. We see it in our own lives where we're afraid at times to be launched because we could fail. We could fall. It could all go crumbling down. And that's true. That's a part of it. But you see, God is sending us into the world. God is attempting to launch us. That's the whole end of the ascension. Like, that's what's now. Like, we have to pick up the mission where he left us off at. And so there's this importance to kind of let us not be afraid of being launched, to not be afraid that it could go horribly wrong. I think about people in the military. You know, at 18 years old, they enlist, they go, they sign up, they go to boot camp, and then it's like they're sent to their first assignments, and they're like 18, 19, 20 years old, and like they're being launched, they're being sent. Or for the young ROTC officers, you know, at 22 and 23, they're called to lead platoons of people. Like, really? Like, we trust them to do that? And we do. I think about this weekend, all the priest assignments have been announced. Again, I'm not going anywhere, so whether you're happy or sad about that, whatever. But, like, I looked at the list, because one of our guys is, like, this crazy, like, figuring everything out, like, 12 hours or 2 hours after it's all been announced. And you look at the list of all the moves, and there's guys being made pastors who have been priests for, like, a year, right? They're 28, 29 years old. They're being called to go and lead a parish. Like, they're being sent, they're being launched. And it's like, are they ready? Like, well, they better figure out how to get ready. But the caveat to all of that is God remains with us. So Jesus, at all of this, says, but they went forth and preached everywhere, while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the word through accompanying signs. So what now? Now we go. Now we continue. Now we get to work. And in this idea of being launched, of being sent, just like the apostles, let's just remember this. Jesus, before all this, had sent them out. He sent them out two by two. He said, go. Don't take an extra tunic. Like, don't take anything extra. Just go and proclaim. He's not even asking us to go to that extreme. Like, you can still keep your clothes. You can, in fact, even keep your money. And you can keep your cars. He just wants you to go. Like, it's not nearly as intense. But are we going or are we not? And why not? I think too often we judge our success in earthly measures. And in my head, this analogy was way funnier than how it was portrayed last night. And so I just told everyone, just humor me and laugh when I laugh. It'll just make me feel better. So what's the most commonly used measuring system in the world? The metric system. Who does not use the metric system? Us. We like to be different. Wonderful. So why do we choose to use the most commonly used measuring system as far as earthly terms? Oh, I'm only successful if I have a job and money and I do these things. Maybe we should be different like the imperial system and have a different measuring system for success. Let's call it the heavenly system. Good job. Thank you. But in all reality, like, why do we continue to try to be like everyone else? We are not like everyone else. As Christians, we're different. Let's be different. So when it comes to our successes, it's not about having the biggest churches and the most people and the greatest amount of collections of money. No, it's something entirely different. It's the soul. It's how is this soul being nourished? How is the soul being cared for? How am I developing and growing and fostering the relationship that I need to have with God? How am I bringing more to come to know that relationship? So when we're sent, it's not to just maximize numbers. We're being sent to redeem souls. That's such a much more important task. And so I think there are three key questions we should be asking ourselves when it comes to all this. Jesus, he ascended. He's gone. So what now? How am I being sent out to be launched as his disciples? And here's the three questions. The first is, who are we living for? Are we living for the Lord? Or are we living for someone else? There's nothing wrong with living for your spouse, living for your children. Like, that's all good. But are we living for God primarily? Are we living our life so that we can glorify him or just appease other people? The next question is, who are we working for? Are we working for the 9-to-5 job to get the paycheck? Are we working for the grades and the attributes and the accolades? Or are we working for the Lord, who doesn't judge and measure us by earthly standards, who instead judges and measures us by a heavenly standard? Are we working so as to ensure that others can know who he is and to know the gift of what it is to have him in our life? The third question is going to sound a little strange, so you kind of got to hear it out. Who are we dying for? How we kill ourselves trying to accomplish all these things in the world, trying to keep up with the Joneses, trying to make ends meet. Who are we dying for? The appraise of others, or are we dying to ourselves for the Lord? Christianity is not intrinsically hard. though it asks us to do hard things. It gives us rules and boundaries and guidelines, not to limit our fun or enjoyment, but to give us actually boundaries to have more freedom and peace. Who are we dying for? Are we dying to the world to make the world happy? Or are we dying to the Lord to follow him better? So thinking about all of this, what are the practicals? What's the practical thing about what now? What do I do? There's a whole smorgasbord I could give you, but I'm going to just try to do three. So be practical. First, invite. We all know someone who's not here or hasn't been to church or hasn't been trying to engage in a relationship with the Lord. We may even need to invite ourselves. So invite. Secondly, commit. Once we acknowledge, like, yeah, I am being sent. I am called to do something. I do need to get to work. Commit to that reality. That might mean changing daily schedules, daily routines. It might mean re-engaging in the sacraments of confession. Again, mass. It might mean spending more time in prayer. It might mean just doing less earthly things as well. Invite, commit, and then the last one is give. And the giving is really beautiful because it can be a multitude of things. Like, it's not all about give money, right? It's give of yourself. You're the most precious commodity is your time, your talents. Yeah, we need treasures to turn on the lights and to, you know, do things. But if we are giving of ourselves, then we are committing because we've accepted an invitation. Like, you see how they kind of all go together? Now, last night, I got a little salty. So I'll just say this in maybe a slightly, well, no, I'm going to say it the way I said it last night. Because I am who I am. So, but you know I love you. I love you. Last night, I said, okay, like, here's a practical, like, at the end of Mass, we should, before we rush out of here and go on to the next thing, we should ultimately always try to offer a prayer of thanksgiving. And so first, that begins with, don't leave before Mass is done. I see people leave. I'm not blind. It's not a big church. I can see people leaving. Now, to be fair, maybe there's an emergency. I don't know why you're leaving, so I'm not going to judge you. I'm really not. But if you're leaving with the wrong intent, right, that's on the person. So before we leave Mass in haste, stop and say a prayer of thanksgiving. A prayer of thanksgiving takes 5 seconds, 10 seconds, does not take a long time. But in that prayer of thanksgiving, think about how God might be asking you to invite a person or yourself, how the Lord is providing you the opportunity to commit to something in the church, and how the Lord is saying, asking you to give, and how you can even give of yourself. So what now? The Lord ascended. What do? We get to work. We share the gospel. We grow the relationship he wants with us. We correct our behaviors so that we can be the best vessels possible for his word and his mission. Who are we living for? Who are we working for? And who are we dying for?